Same in this plane. There could be other forms of life, only they were settled rather than exploring, unseen and unheard. Dazzle didn't know how he would find them if he wanted to. Instead, he searched for Lyda, who would probably explore as he did. He knew she was far north of here, in a village in the middle of a jungle, but Dazzle felt nothing in that direction. Perhaps he wasn't strong enough in his skills yet. Fatol had proven he could pull Lyda's mind involuntarily into this plane. He could even keep her from returning. Dazzle had no idea how to do this, or even how to call to Lyda. All he could do was wait and hope she would come eventually. As he waited, he investigated Beatrix and Kernich's clouds of energy. They weren't the same colours as before. Both were darker and mostly grey. With the bright swirls of energy around them, they looked like storm clouds in a sunset sky. The sight didn't seem right. Dazzle wished he could fix it, pushing his mind out into Kernich's cloud of energy to see what he might be able to do. As he pierced the warrior's energy cloud, Dazzle hoped Kernich wouldn't mind. Doing so was like stepping into an unusual room. There was nothing but grey energy to see, but Dazzle felt like he could reach out to hold many different things. Nervously, he did reach out for one at random and took a firm hold with his mind. Nothing happened. Nor did he feel anything different. He let go and left Kernich's cloud alone. Suddenly, Dazzle felt something. No, someone. He reached out toward her, knowing it was Lyda without understanding how.
Lyda, can you hear me?
Yes, clearly. My stars, Dazzle. You're in Ovira?
I am. Are you all right?
I'm fine. Just keep doing what you're doing. Whatever you tell me here, Fatol will find out, so be careful.
Where is he?
I don't know. I think it was 2 days ago that he went with his portal mage to Goldrum for the Akarul. He came back a day later, enraged.
She paused.
I was glad for it. I knew it meant you had escaped him.
Communicating with Lyda was like talking to her through a wall. He could make out her voice, but not clearly enough to catch any of her inflections. Without being able to see her either, he could do nothing but guess the meanings behind her pauses.
Fatol has tortured you,
he assumed. She didn't answer for a little while.
Yes, but I'm fine. We should take better advantage of this opportunity and talk about him instead of me. He'll probably never let us speak alone again.
But Dazzle wasn't sure he could do that. He wanted to know more about Lyda.
We want to come for you,
he had to tell her.
You must not, and you must not tell me any of your plans.
She paused.
I'm sorry. I miss you, but I'm fine, Dazzle. My father and I can stay here as long as it takes. Let me think what I can tell you about Fatol that might help.
Dazzle's pain deepened as he tried to ignore his affection for Lyda.
I miss you too. Do you know his plans?
Only that he won't stop trying to take the Akarul from you. He hasn't come to see us in a while, and Vithos, our only visitor, doesn't seem to know anything.
Another presence entered the plane. It could only be Fatol. Dazzle wasn't sure if he should run back to the physical realm or try to gain what he could from a conversation.
Dazzle Fogg!
Too late. Dazzle pretended not to be afraid.
Fatol, something or other.
One day I'll give you the honour of learning my surname and all about my family, but that's only after you bring me the Akarul. When are you going to deliver it?
Never. So you might as well let Lyda and Basin go.
Fatol seemed to expect this and ignored it. He asked,
How did you get to Ovira so quickly?
Dazzle realized this was an opportunity to learn something.
I made a portal.
He lied. There was a pause, so the elf probably couldn't catch lies with Psyche in this plane.
That's right, he told Fatol. I made a portal here. You'll have no hope of catching us now that I can make them, but if you let Lyda and Basin go, we can forget that your elves ever fought against humans. I will let Basin take a portal out. All you have to do—
He won't, Lyda interrupted. Don't do anything he says.
Dazzle felt her presence disappear from the plane as Fatol no doubt removed her.
Lyda doesn't know what I will or will not do. She believes that I won't kill her or her father.
Dazzle didn't want to get into a discussion about that, for he would have nothing to gain from trying to figure out if Fatol was lying.
What were you going to say about letting Basin take a portal out? Dazzle asked.
You don't believe I will kill them?
It doesn't matter if I do or don't. The threat will not change anything.
It was a comfort to lie to the elven leader without too much worry, but it would be a waste to continue on this topic. Fatigue was starting to set in. Dazzle would have to go back to the physical plane soon enough.
What do I have to do for you to release Basin?
Just tell me where to send him.
Kavor, Dazzle answered quickly, knowing this was a test.
You're enjoying lying, aren't you?
Very much.
I'm not lying. I know you didn't make a portal.
Dazzle was disappointed to hear that. Fatal had mentioned Dazzle's potential the first time they'd met in the physical plane. He'd hoped making portals was what Fatal had referred to, but apparently not.
I am known for making deals and staying true to them, Dazzle. It's important that I can be trusted, for I often have to deal with leaders of other races along with nuisances like yourself. I will make you a deal right now. I will tell you something true and valuable if you promise to tell me the truth as to how you got to Avira so quickly. Do you agree?
It depends on what you're going to tell me.
It's about the fate of Basin and Lyda if you do not bring me the Akaral. Their true fate.
Intrigued, and having difficulty concentrating in this plane, Dazzle could think of nothing else but to agree.
Fine. But you go first.
So it's a deal? It's important you don't break these agreements, or I might get angry and do something we both regret.
I agree. What do you have to tell me about Basin and Lyda?
Lyda will stay here until the Akaral arrives, then I will trade her for it. But it seems to me that you don't care about her or Basin enough to ever come here, so I will release Basin. He will have to convince you to bring the Akaral back to me, or his daughter dies. All of this is true.
Dazzle cursed as he realized he believed the elf. Would Basin let Lyda die and wage war against the elves?
That is why I need to know where to send him, Fatal continued. Is Kavol really what you prefer?
Is that the question you want answered for this deal?
It's a question you want to answer for yourself and for Lyda.
I don't. Not until I have more time to think.
You're either going to tell me where you are, or I will find you eventually. Tell me how you got there, now.
In a portal, like I said. Only I wasn't the one to make it.
Who did?
The person responsible didn't know where we were going, so there's no point in questioning them. Dazzle needed to protect Kiel if he could.
You didn't fully answer my question.
I did, Dazzle insisted.
I got here in a portal. You're going to make me angry if you don't tell me who made you a portal and where they are.
What would you do with them?
Instead, you should ask what I'm going to do to Lyda.
Dazzle suddenly felt her presence again.
I couldn't hear what you've said, Dazzle, but I can hear Fathol.
She sounded to be struggling as she spoke.
I'll be fine no matter what. Don't tell him anything.
She was gone again. Dazzle figured it was time for him to leave as well. He returned to the physical plane and gasped for breath. Beatrix and Kernich put their hands on him for support as he started to waver.
What happened?
Beatrix asked.
Nothing good.
He didn't want to admit it, but there was nothing to gain from another conversation with Fatal. That might have been a blessing for now, because Fatal terrified him. Dazzle longed to speak to Lyda again, but he would have to wait until they met in the physical plane. If that ever happened again.
Chapter 16. After a short discussion, the three of them agreed that Fatal probably had told the truth about releasing Basin.
That Basin would want us to keep going, Beatrix said with certainty. He knows Fatal isn't going to kill his daughter.
How could he know that?
Kernich asked dubiously.
If that elf says he's going to kill someone, he's going to kill them, like he told Dazzle. He's known for staying true to his deals.
It could lead to a war against his elves, Dazzle said, hoping Kernich was wrong.
Killing her might, but it also might not. I'm sure he's aware of how busy humans are killing each other right now. Even when the killing ends, I can't imagine either king sending an army to Meriek to start a war with the elves. Years could pass before they even contemplate the idea. And by then no one will care about a dead daughter except us, Lyda's family and her other friends. Fatal knows this won't be enough to start a war.
If Basin was headmaster of the academy again, Dazzle said, then he should be able to incite troops into fighting.
Like I said, it might lead to war, and only in that scenario where Basin becomes headmaster again. Fatal probably knows this as well, so he will take measures to prevent it.
What measures?
Beatrix asked. The three of them fell silent.
I don't know, Kernich answered eventually. It won't come to that, because Basin will trade the Akaral for his daughter, if we let him.
They were silent again.
Dazzle stopped his mount and got off. "Let's put the Ackerall bags back on the saddle. I can walk for the rest of the night." The silent trek gave them time to think. It didn't take long before all their spirits were low. Anger filled Dazzle's mind. Fatal had turned the most difficult task of Dazzle's life into something that might be impossible now.
"If the Wind Knights do manage to help us," Dazzle said, "and we build this catapult and manage to stop the war with it, I doubt Fatal will kill Lyda. Doing so could provoke us to strike his village with an explosion."
"So you're hoping Basin doesn't find us? Is that what you're saying?"
Beatrix asked.
"Yes. If he ever does find us, he can teleport back to Fatal and tell the truth. But if he never does find us, that option will be taken away."
"Basin is smart," Kurnitch said. "He's eventually going to figure out we went to the craps."
"Then maybe this is the wrong idea." Dazzle stopped.
Kurnitch and Beatrix halted.
"What do you have in mind?" Kurnitch asked.
"That we go where Basin wouldn't think to look. But then how would the Wind Knights find us?"
"Perhaps we shouldn't use them," Beatrix said.
"The three of us build this on our own?" Kurnitch scoffed. "We'll need supplies, more than just axes and wood. Are either of you builders? I'm not. We'll also need a blacksmith to shape the Ackerall. Do either of you know how to do that without risking damage to it?" "No. The only place we can build this thing where Alaphon's troops can't reach us is with the craps. They should have everything we need. They might even be able to help us if the Wind Knights never show up."
"We still don't know why the craps would even let us stay there," Dazzle pointed out.
He put up his hands as he saw Kurnitch's face twisting.
"I agree with everything you've said. I think it has to be the craps as well, but besides dueling to gain entrance, what can we give them that will make them want us there?"
"I thought you were going to figure that out," Kurnitch said.
"Well, I need help." "They're never going to want us there, no matter what," Beatrix argued. "Craps believe hosting another race is a dishonor, and honor is everything to them."
The three of them fell silent once more. It took a while, but eventually Dazzle had an idea.
"We have to be worthy to live off Crepan land. One way is with gifts, but we're already going to have to lie about the purpose behind the Ackerall, or they'll realize it's valuable and take it from us for trade. We're not letting them have it no matter what."
"We have nothing else to trade them," Beatrix said.
Dazzle finally had an idea.
"So we won't trade anything. We'll give them something better, a reason to keep us there."
Kurnitch asked,
"What lies are you going to tell them?"
"No lies. Just exaggerations."
It took two more days before they were close to the Crepan colony within the forest. After the plan was set, the three of them didn't speak much during the day, and even less at night. They once heard a stick crack, perhaps under someone else's footsteps, but Beatrix investigated and sensed only animals, not humans or elves. Troops loyal to her brother must be searching for them, but it was possible that none had come this way yet. There was nothing out here except craps. During the nights, Dazzle's slumber was restless, filled by mixtures of dreams and sensations from the other plane. He felt Fatal reaching out for him and always ran. He awoke each morning tired, and with the feeling that he'd come out of a nightmare. It was now a short walk to the home of thousands of creps in Regash Forest. Dazzle kept to himself behind his two comrades and his horse, practicing his crepan aloud. Their lives depended on it. Everyone in Kaval had heard stories of men travelling through Regash Forest and creps catching sight of them. Some of the stories told tales of the humans fleeing and escaping. Others described them being surrounded, dropping their weapons and surrendering, then being let go. Then there were the men who were never seen again. Everyone assumed they'd tried to fight. There were no stories of commoners like Dazzle entering the Crepan encampment. Only the famous men and women of Kiro, like Lyda's father, were known to discuss and trade with Creps. But even Basin Hiller wouldn't be allowed to live with them, and especially not build anything on their land. Dazzle wasn't just any commoner, however, and neither were his comrades. The Creps would be honoured to host them. Well, they definitely wouldn't be at first, so it was up to Dazzle to convince them. They eventually reached the familiar warning posts of wood displaying the crude carving of a male crep, and passed by them without slowing. Many of the trees around here were little more than stumps, the creps requiring their wood. Each year there were fewer reports of encountering creps elsewhere besides near their colony. Most people, like Dazzle, believed that more creps joined the others here in Regash Forest all the time.
"Some ahead,"
Kurnitsch warned. Dessel got himself to the front, while Beatrix moved to the rear with a horse behind her. Dessel had already taken the bastial energy out of all the ackerel that had absorbed any, so their bags wouldn't glow. No Kreps built their homes upon the edge of their territory, but many probably patrolled this area, hoping to see another race, daring to approach. Dessel noticed both of the Kreps were smiling when they found him. They both drew their swords. Unfortunately, they did not call out to the other Kreps in the distance behind them. Instead, they said something to each other and charged the humans.
"Craw!"
Dessel called to them. "Stop!"
"Ris Fario Felk!"
"We humans with enough honor." The Kreps stopped, suddenly each reaching out to grab the other as they slid across the ground on their bare feet. They spoke to one another. From what Dessel understood, they seemed surprised a Felk, or a human, could speak Krepan, even if he was missing a verb.
"Ris kio lielol nebre?"
"We need speak nebre." Dessel wasn't sure if the Kreps even heard him. Their long lizard faces were turned toward each other. Their eyes were shaped like those of humans, only they were bright yellow with black pupils. Dessel dared not repeat himself. Doing so could be considered an insult. Any insult was an act of dishonor, and any act of dishonor was likely to lead to a fight. Not a duel, a fight. It seemed that one of these two Kreps still wanted that. The creature held his sword with both hands, the large muscles on his arms bulging as he gestured tensely. Like all Kreps, they were covered with grey scales that Dessel knew to be harder than human skin. Humans weren't known for defeating Kreps in sword combat, but these two would easily be slain if they attacked. Unfortunately, there would be no way to convince the rest of the Kreps that showed up afterward to let Dessel and the others stay in their colony if they killed any Kreps. Beatrix and Kurnitsch waited behind. They knew not to show their weapons or threaten the Kreps in any way. It would have been difficult for Dessel to follow the same advice at the front, but he had no weapon to hold for protection anyway. There was only one sword between the three of them, and Kurnitsch wore it on his belt. Dessel had stuck his dagger into the softened corner of the Fjallion Mountains before descending during his escape. It was probably still there, stuck in the hard rock. The Krep with his hands on his sword shuffled toward Dessel, the scowl on his face deepening. Dessel could hear their conversation more clearly now. The other Krep used words like
Fari,
or honor, and Lailol, or speak, as well as Nebre's name many times. Dessel didn't understand much else, for they were talking quickly and mostly at the same time. But eventually the aggressive Krep put his sword back in his sheath and turned to show his back to the humans. He walked off, the other Krep trailing behind until he stopped and turned around. He pointed at Dessel, holding his clawed finger in the air.
"Ruakwan Yuruldiana,"
the Krep told them.
"You move, you die."
Dessel wished he could tell the Krep he understood, but he didn't know the word.
"Oken,"
he said instead.
"Yes."
The three of them were left alone with their horse.
"Only one of them wanted to kill us," Dessel said optimistically. "Actually, I think both wanted to, but only one would have done it even after I told him we were honorable and needed to speak to Nebre. The other protected us."
"What did he say before he went off with the other?"
Beatrix asked.
"He told us to wait."
"Dessel?"
It was easy to forget, but he couldn't lie to her.
"He said we would die if we moved."
Kurnitsch scoffed.
"Those two Kreps think they could have killed us."
"They certainly did," Beatrix answered. "I felt as much enthusiasm as I did aggression. We were an opportunity to them. Killing trespassing humans brings them honor among their kin. Let's remember that, and not relax, Dessel. Your energy tells me how calm you've been."
A horde of Kreps were headed toward them.
"You don't have to worry about that anymore," Dessel assured her.
He looked for Nebre among the Kreps, but they all looked alike to him. About half of the males were bald. The others had little mounds of black hair that flopped around as if only connected to the centre of their head. The smallest among them were as large as Kurnitsch. The females were closer to Dessel's stature, though many had thicker arms. Their hair was black, a little fuller than the males, but never hanging down farther than their shoulders. Their legs bent drastically at the knee, even when they stood upright. This didn't diminish their height very much. None of the males wore shirts, as it was probably an issue of shame to cover their bodies. The females did, however, showing a little more taste in the way they dressed, it seemed, with some of their leather dyed dark colours like black and blue. The Kreps chattered as they encircled the humans. Dazzle lifted his hands in surrender and made sure not to stare at any one Krep. He hoped Nebre was here. If not, perhaps at least one of them remembered Dazzle from the last time he'd been here, when he'd dueled a large Krep and lost, but had fought bravely. The way the Kreps spat and voiced what sounded to be complaints made it seem unlikely. A Krep stepped into the circle. Dazzle finally recognized him as Nebre, the Krep who Dazzle had met the time he came here alone. Nebre had given Dazzle a note from Basin while cradling two Krepan babies in his arms. His common tongue was near perfect, though with an accent. The Kreps quieted as Nebre stared at them from side to side. He said something in Krepan about humans, then turned back to Dazzle.
"I know you. I told them. You are Dazzle Fogg, right?"
"Yes, I'm here on behalf of Basin Hiller."
Some of these Kreps recognized the headmaster's name, repeating Basin in their deep voices.
"Can we speak in private?" Dazzle asked Nebre. This seemed to amuse the Krep. He smiled for a blink before fixing his face.
"No, that request would get me killed. They won't allow it. I must translate everything, including this."
He switched into Krepan and announced what had been said.
"I only ask because it will be easier that way. You can translate everything afterward. We aren't trying to hide anything."
Nebre translated, then gestured for Dazzle to put down his arms.
"I am here only to translate," he told Dazzle. "Decisions must come from my father. Why have you come here?"
Dazzle cleared his throat, then began his announcement.
"The best human warrior in all of Kiro is here. His name is Kernich Cholder."
Dazzle gestured at Kernich. Nebre translated after each sentence.
"The woman next to him is not just any woman. She is the princess of Kiro and the most powerful psychic on the continent. I brought them here on behalf of Basin Hiller, the headmaster of the academy, to challenge you Kreps. Other humans will be coming later to face more of you as well, in a long challenge for entertainment and pride. You will face our best fighters of sword and magic."
The chatter of the crowd grew too loud for Dazzle to continue. Nebre shouted over them to finish his translation, and the crowd grew even louder. Many of the Kreps seemed excited as they spoke to one another, but there were an equal number who were confused. Many screamed questions to Nebre, who yelled back answers. It took a while for the noise to die down, but many of the Kreps held smiles when it did.
"What kind of fighting?" Nebre asked. "Many want to know."
Kernich stepped up beside Dazzle. He lifted his fist theatrically and announced,
"Sword combat! We will see if any Kreps are strong enough and fast enough to beat me."
Beatrix stepped up and mimicked Kernich's gestures.
"Combat of the mind. We will see if any Kreps have the mental strength to resist my spells of pain."
Dazzle wished he could raise his fist and announce something about himself, but there were probably only a few Kreps in the entire colony he could beat in a duel.
"The battles will be for entertainment and pride," he felt the need to repeat. "The swords must be wood, or their edges must be dulled."
One of the largest Kreps stepped into the circle and thumped his chest. He spoke as he pointed at Kernich. Many of the Kreps seemed to agree as they cheered with shakes of their fists and stomps of their feet. Nebre translated.
"He says you will lose your first fight, which is to be against him here and now. Then the three of you will leave in humiliation."
"Fetch the dueling swords," Dazzle said.
"There is no need,"
Kernich told him before Nebre could translate. Dazzle lowered his voice to speak only to Kernich.
"We talked about this."
"I know. I've changed my mind."
"Kernich, we haven't even established the rules."
"Move!"
He pushed Dazzle out of the path of the charging Krep as he drew his sword with his other hand. Kernich was half a head smaller as the two locked swords. The Krep's shoulders extended out past Kernich's on both sides. The more powerful creature pushed against Kernich and his weapon, but the warrior moved aside and left his foot in place. The Krep tripped over it. Kernich kicked up to ensure the creature fell. Kernich put the tip of his sword against the back of the Krep's neck before he could rise. The dumb creature still tried to fight, spinning around and thrashing his weapon at Kernich, who backed away.
"I could have killed you already," Kernich told the Krep.
After Nebre translated, many of the Kreps shouted agreements that Dazzle partially understood. The enraged Krep who'd fought Kernich tried to shout back to them, but he was yelled at and spat at until he stormed through the crowd away from the village. Dazzle wondered if he was leaving out of shame or if he would return. He did look back at Kernich with such anger that no words were needed. He wanted to kill the human who'd embarrassed him.
"This could be more dangerous than we first realized," Beatrix noted. "Those you beat will want revenge."
"I have to win," Kernich argued, "or we're gone."
Many more Kreps shouted to Nebre. They often used a phrase Dazzle's father had taught him early in their Krepan lessons. Yektik, fight hard. They seemed to be volunteering themselves to fight Kernich next, and unfortunately, Nebre looked as if he was having trouble choosing, rather than trying to placate them. They broke their circle, both male and female Kreps edging closer to Nebre like children eager to be selected for a game. Dazzle moved closer to Nebre than all of them. "Kernich will fight again tomorrow," he told the Krep. "Now Beatrix will prove herself against one Krepan today."
"I understand," Nebre said, then spoke to the crowd in Krepan.
They quieted to listen. Beatrix told Nebre,
"I will explain the rules."
"Kreps don't like rules."
She ignored him.
"I will hurt them without touching them. All they have to do is remain standing for the span of a few breaths to prove themselves."
"Are you really as powerful as Dazzle says?" Nebre asked.
"Yes," she lied.
It didn't matter that there were stronger psychics. No Krep should be able to resist her spell of pain. Nebre explained the challenge to the crowd. When he was done, fewer Kreps volunteered than before. It was still well over half of them, though. Only some of the older Kreps, with deep lines across their scaled forehead and graying hair sprouting from their scalp, thought better than to volunteer. Dazzle figured they'd been part of the Krepan army that went to war against humans long ago. Only they would really know what it was like to face a psychic. Nebre chose a female Krep this time and said a few words about her as she stood 10 paces from Beatrix with an arrogant expression. From what Dazzle understood of Nebre's little speech, he seemed to be announcing that everyone knew this Krep was smart. She had a strong mind. She was the right choice. No one in the audience seemed to disagree.
"Make her scream, Beatrix,"
Kernich whispered.
"I will."
Then Beatrix asked Nebre,
"Is she ready?"
Nebre asked the Krep. She wrapped her knuckles against her shirt collar, then smirked at some of the other Kreps watching. They laughed. Perhaps they were her friends.
"She's ready,"
Nebre said. It wasn't pain that first showed across the Krep's face when Beatrix lifted her hand. It was shock. She let out a sound like, "Wah!" as she collapsed. Beatrix held her spell a moment longer, drawing out a scream from the coiled female. Then the princess let down her hand and the Krep stopped twisting on the ground. She took shallow breaths as she weakly got up. She pushed herself to straighten out too quickly and stumbled. The audience of Kreps ignored her as they clamored, raising their fists to volunteer next. The female walked back into the crowd with her head hanging. The other Kreps who'd laughed before now parted as if they didn't want to be near her. Dazzle felt bad for the defeated Krep, though he was interested in the dynamic of why they treated each other this way. If the other Kreps cared about this female, shouldn't they console her, rather than avoid her? And what would happen if she won? Given how many Kreps wanted to prove themselves, it seemed that they would be honored by their kin if they managed to win. But wouldn't this honor be shaded with jealousy? Honor was the one thing Kreps sought the most, it seemed, so did they really ever genuinely honor each other the way humans respected one another? The most honored Kreps probably had thousands of others jealous of them. Dazzle reminded Nebre that Beatrix and Kernich would fight again tomorrow. For now they needed somewhere to stay in the colony.
"In the colony?"
Nebre repeated.
"That cannot be done. You will sleep in the forest."
"Where Alaphon's army can come upon us and steal our ackerel. They might even thank us for making it so easy, but they would still capture us. Mechlin would be disappointed at the lack of a challenge." Dazzle didn't know what would become of him and Kernich. They would probably rot in the dungeons for the rest of their lives, where their knowledge of the truth about Alaphon murdering the late king would be kept hidden. He supposed it wouldn't be the same for Beatrix. Jimin had admitted before torturing her that he was the one responsible for giving Alaphon the poison to use. He'd told Alaphon that it would make the king sick, not kill him. Now Jimin was probably waiting to kill Alaphon until the councilman figured out a way for the crown to fall to him. He'd certainly kill Beatrix as well.
"We need to be within the colony,"
Beatrix said, no doubt using psyche to sway Nebra's mind.
It's not up to me.
Then who? Beatrix asked.
My father. He is the leader. But he will not make a decision to host humans. Doing so would make him leader no longer.
Then we must convince these creps, Dezel realized. If they accept us, the others should as well. He turned to his comrades. We'll do so with the truth. Nebri glanced at Dezel sideways.
Have you told the lies?
No, but there is more that we haven't yet mentioned. We were going to wait until we were accepted, but that isn't going to work now.
Dezel, Konich warned, let's speak about this first.
The Kreps started to yell to Nebri, something about humans. Nebri turned around to address them, probably explaining what the humans had told him. Rather than listen, Dezel spoke quietly with Konich.
If we aren't allowed in the colony, then this is pointless. The worst they can do is
take our Akarul and trade it to Alifon or Orphan,
Konich interrupted.
Whoever offers the most to the Kreps.
We have to tell the truth, Dezel insisted. But there's a right way to do it.
Let me, Dezel, Beatrix said.
Because of psyche?
Dezel whispered, making sure Nebri couldn't hear.
Not just that.
Because she's a princess, Konich answered for her. She has more practice dealing with these kinds of affairs than the two of us combined.
She didn't seem to deal with King Carolto of Goldrum very well, ending up in prison.
All right, Dezel said, rather than speak his thoughts. He did trust Beatrix.
They are ready, Nebri said. Explain why you must stay here.
The Kreps waited silently, crossing their arms while holding little smiles Dezel didn't fully understand.
I know it is usually a dishonor to allow a human onto your land, Beatrix began, but these are different circumstances.
She pointed back at their horse and bags.
If three of you came to the academy with the same belongings that we have brought here, and you were the best fighters of all the Kreps, we would gladly host you. We would provide you with shelter and food and the resources you would need to build what you need to build. All we would ask in return is that you fight our men and women for entertainment and practice, a pleasure for both races.
She paused to let Nebri finish translating. When he was done, he listened to many questions from the Kreps, their smiles replaced by twisted mouths.
They and I want to know if you really believe we will feed and shelter you.
Of course. Not only will we beat your Kreps in combat, we will teach them how to fight against elements they've never beaten before, psyche and other magic. The Kreps will be stronger by the time we leave, and that will be because of us. Food and shelter are nothing compared to what we are prepared to do for your race.
The Kreps sounded surprised as Nebri translated. Many of them spat on the dirt.
You act as if you're better than us,
Nebri said without anger, probably just translating.
Not better, different. No one in the world can combat certain forms of magic without training,
Beatrix explained.
Kreps have pride, as they should, because they are the strongest fighters in the world, so shouldn't that mean they can beat any opponent? Ask them, Nebri. Do they believe Kreps should beat any opponent?
As Nebri relayed her words, many of the Kreps hollered loudly in their language, and some pounded their chests. But one Krep started to yell above the rest. She put her hands in the air and stepped forward into the circle to speak. She was the one who'd lost to Beatrix. Konich let out a soft curse as they waited for her to finish. When she was done, the Kreps pointed at the humans and spoke loudly. Nebri listened quietly for a long while. Eventually he lifted his arms. He had to hold them up for quite some time before the Kreps quieted down. When they did, he said just one sentence.
Kreps should beat any opponent, so long as the fight is fair.
Fair? Combat is never fair, Beatrix continued. One opponent will always be stronger or quicker. Kreps have both of those advantages over humans. Was it fair when our ancestors in Kiro had to fight against a large army, half of them Kreps? No, and we're not here to complain about that. We don't care about the past, only the present. As many of you know, there is another war being waged between Kiro and Tenred. And as many of you also know, that means thousands of humans will die. We have come here in hopes of stopping the war, but there are humans, evil humans like my own brother, who want to kill us.
After the Kreps reacted with surprise, Nebri asked,
This is true, that your brother is trying to kill you?
He has tried and failed, and he won't stop until I'm dead. We have something he wants.
She pointed at their belongings again.
It's called acryl metal. It has a small use on its own, but combined with other things, it should be able to stop the war completely and for good. If it gets into the wrong hands, however, then one ruler would use the power to destroy the other kingdom and all the people inside.
Beatrix gave Nebra a moment, but then she continued before the crowd could clamour.
We set off with Basin Hiller months ago, marked as traitors by my own family. Remember that I am the princess of Kiro. My brother is now king. Basin has since been captured, but he wants us to finish this without him. We have gone through the most difficult journey of our lives to get here, and we stand before you now asking for a trade. We have come here to fight, entertain, and train you honorable creps, but we have also come here to take sanctuary against humans that might one day come for your land. Human greed is strong in my brother, and in the king he fights against. If one of them obtains the power we hope to use against the two of them, then no amount of strength or training will save the creps. We planned to share these details with you as soon as we were situated, but we understand that you need to know more before hosting us on your honorable land. We did not lie, and we will not use you. We will be indebted to you. We will fight and work for your support, and I swear this to you. All Kreps will be glad that you honored us today as soon as they understand the situation as well as you do.
When Nebri was done, the Kreps spoke to each other with low voices. Dazzle tried to read their thoughts based on their curious looks toward one another, but they seemed to be waiting for a consensus as much as he was.
Nebri, Dazzle said, I know you trust Basin. He's prepared to give his life for this cause, and he just might lose his family over it. Your Kreps need a leader just for this moment. You know us better than any of them do. Tell them what you believe.
Nebri looked into Dazzle's eyes. When he apparently found whatever he was looking for, he turned and raised his arms to call for silence. Nebri spoke slowly, pointing behind him at the three humans. He sounded angry, as if offended by something Dazzle had said. It was nerve-wracking, especially when Dazzle recognized the word for humans many times. Felks. Nebri didn't speak for long, ending with a strong shake of his fist. The Kreps roared in response. Nebri turned to address Dazzle's group.
I said that humans are greedy. They are liars. They use tricks to get what they want.
Nebri,
but not these humans, I said. They have dedicated their lives to a cause. They use the truth to get what they want, and they are strong. It brings us honor to allow them onto our land. We will fight them every day, until we know not only how to beat them, but any human who might one day challenge us.
Chapter 17 Many of the Kreps remained with Nebri to escort the humans through the colony. Every Krep they passed either came over to ask about the humans or shouted their questions from afar. Nebri didn't bother translating and Dazzle didn't bother asking. It was clear enough by their expressions that the Kreps were offended to see humans here. Dazzle never stayed around long enough to see if their expressions changed by the time they received explanations from Kreps shouting back to them. It was a large group no longer by the time they reached their destination, many of the Kreps peeling off to speak with annoyed onlookers.
"You will stay here," Nebra said with finality. "There is room for you and other humans when they arrive."
They'd been discussing the Wind Knights with Nebra on the way here. The Krep knew to let Cleve Polkad into the colony, but Nebri wasn't sure if he'd recognize any of the others. What's worse was that he was unlikely to be near the perimeter when they arrived. He lived a good distance from the edge of the territory. Dazzle, Beatrix, and Kernich carried their heavy acryl bags. They didn't want a Krep to help, and fortunately none offered. The Kreps did take the reins of Dazzle's horse, however, and headed off somewhere. When Dazzle asked Nebri about it, he said,
"Wasn't it a gift?"
Dazzle didn't know how he could take it back. He was thankful now that he and his mother had never named the animal. He was old, sold to them cheaply when money was more of an issue. They'd known they would either have to trade him or bury him at some point in the near future, but Dazzle never could have predicted that this was how he would part with the horse.
"Nebri, will you tell your Kreps to fetch us if any humans are spotted near a perimeter?" Beatrix requested.
"There are too many Kreps. I cannot command all of them to do this. If humans arrive, they are to be fought back unless they prove themselves, or if they are Wind Knights. Many of the Kreps near the perimeter know this, and they will talk to the other Kreps. But not all Kreps can know. There are too many," he repeated. "But I will inform you of any news about humans that I hear. Now, then we'll see my father to explain what has happened. Tomorrow you fight. You must win if you wish to stay."
Nebri started to leave.
"What about a shelter?"
Kurnitz asked. But Dezel already saw the answer. He sighed as he pointed. "Kurnitz, look."
"Oh," Kurnitz grumbled. "Never mind."
A Krep came up to them and dumped three axes on the ground. He said something in Krep and then left. They expected the outsiders to build their own shelters just as they would any new Kreps who arrived requesting to live here. This wasn't done at the humans' expense. It honored them. But in this case, Dezel would forego honor in exchange for using another Krep's home. He figured there were no vacant houses, though. No Kreps were in the business of building homes to sell, like humans would. Dezel wasn't sure if these Kreps even used currency, though it seemed unlikely that they didn't, now that there were thousands living here. Dezel still hadn't got a chance to talk to Nebri about Fatal. The elves shouldn't have permission to enter any more, but Fatal might be an exception. Dezel figured he'd have his chance to speak to Nebri's father eventually, hopefully soon. He noticed Beatrix and Kurnitz looking at him with worry. Dezel could almost read their thoughts. "I do know how to build a shelter," he told them, "but don't expect to sleep in luxury."
"Anything is better than sleeping on the ground with no roof," Kurnitz said.
"We won't accomplish much in one day," Dezel warned them. There were trees of varying sizes all around. The Kreps had obviously chosen this spot for that reason. Dezel took command as he instructed Beatrix and Kurnitz to help him chop down 16 saplings. Their trunks were no wider than the circle Dezel could make with his fingertips and thumbs touching. It shouldn't be too difficult. By the time they cut down the trees, all of them were sweating. Dezel started to wonder if the Kreps would feed them that day. He caught Beatrix looking at her hands while grimacing. Kurnitz looked ready for more work, however, staring at Dezel eagerly. "We have to cut holes in the ground with the right width and depth for each of these trunks to fit snugly," he instructed. "We don't have time to make separate structures for each of us, so we'll just make one to share. We should be able to finish a roof before nightfall."
"There's no grass here, only hard dirt," Beatrix complained.
"Maybe the Kreps will give us mattresses already stuffed," Dezel said dubiously.
"Otherwise what?"
He gave her a look until she figured out the answer.
"Oh."
"At least we have blankets," Kurnitz said.
They each started making their own holes. Dezel couldn't soften the ground or it might damage the integrity of each hole.
"I forgot about the rocks," he told them. "We need to stop to look for the right ones."
"I'll search,"
Beatrix offered. Kurnitz scoffed.
"We all will. I don't like digging with my hands any better than you do."
"Yes, but you're better at it."
"We're going to need rocks for hammering as well as digging," Dezel explained. "Try to find rocks with pointed ends and flat sides. These will be of the most use." Dezel let the two of them search as he worked on the poles. They needed to be of equal height to support a roof. Two taller ones would be placed in the middle, allowing the roof to be slanted on either side so rainwater couldn't gather and push through the leaves Dezel planned to use as the roof. He chopped through many of the small trunks until each one could be paired with another of the same height. Beatrix and Kurnitz still weren't back, so Dezel stuck one pole at a time into each of the three holes to test them. Unfortunately, only the hole he'd made was the right size to support a trunk. He had to make many modifications to the hole Kurnitz had made, which was too big, but much more work was needed for the little ditch the princess had dug out. When they were ready, Dezel used a piece of a pole as a stake and hammered it into each hole with his boot. When the holes were deep enough, he thrust the poles into them and padded dirt up around them. Kreps watched him as he worked, though only a few seemed to pass this way. He met eyes with each one who he noticed, giving them a nod as if to tell them thanks. They either didn't understand this or didn't care to respond, staring at him a moment longer before stiffening their posture as they walked off. With his two comrades still looking for rocks, Dezel realized he should have given them some advice. One rock could be used to shape another. They didn't have to be perfect when they were found. It had been a while since he'd built shelters with his mother and father. Wade was the expert, not Effie, who'd never done any building until she met Wade. But she took to it quickly, as did Dezel. He loved watching something come together from hard work. There was too little of that kind of reward when helping his mother in their tavern. Finally, Beatrix and Kernich returned.
"We couldn't get the exact rocks you wanted," the princess said, "but we hope what we collected will still work."
They dumped 9 rocks on the ground. All were about the right size, but many were bulky in the middle, with square or rounded edges. Only 2 had pointed tips.
"That's fine," Bezel said. "Let me show you something."
He took the smallest rock in one hand and a long rock in the other. He then bashed the smaller against the bigger repeatedly, near the flat edge at the end. He did this for a long while, until eventually Kernich asked,
"What are you showing us?"
Bezel handed him the 2 rocks. "Keep doing it. You'll eventually have sharpened the edge, and you can use it as a shovel."
"Is this really going to save time?"
"Look closely. It's already working." Kernich squinted at the long rock up close. He got to work after that while Dezel and Beatrix dug with rocks with pointed tips that weren't exactly ideal, but they were much better than their hands. Dezel instructed her to hammer the rock in first with another rock, then pry it out to make the most of her effort. Eventually Kernich had finished sharpening his rock, and the 3 of them dug out the rest of the 12 holes in quick time. Dezel was really feeling hunger by then, and knew it must be the same for Beatrix and Kernich. It was already evening. Dezel had forgotten how quickly the time went when he was building. They definitely wouldn't have a roof by nightfall. They could eat the last of the food they'd gotten from his mother, or they could wait and hope the crepes brought them something. Dezel couldn't tell if it was fortunate or not that a small crowd of about 10 crepes had stopped whatever they were supposed to be doing that day to watch the humans work. Crepes did so, chatting lively with one another, chewing on something, sipping on something else. They were too far away for Dezel to tell what. He took a chance and walked over. They stood as if threatened when he came closer. He made himself smile. He enjoyed speaking the Crepan word for hello. It was too bad he didn't get to use it more often. The creatures were always rushing toward him, ready to fight, and hello, obviously, was never appropriate for that.
"Gahura," he said. "Ri lu Dezel. Lu Farri."
"Hello, I'm Dezel. It's an honor." He thought his Crepan had been spoken perfectly, but none of the Creps reacted. He tried to keep his smile, but nerves were pulling down the corners of his mouth.
"Ris yek yuni," he said. "Rikeo."
"We fight tomorrow. We need..." But he didn't know the word for food, so he motioned as if he was putting something in his mouth, then chewing. The Creps still didn't react, so he put his hands on his stomach and made a face of pain.
"Hungry,"
he said in common tongue.
"The
look they were giving him was starting to appear threatening. None of them spoke a word to one another, and definitely not to him.
"Dezel,"
Beatrix called. He turned and saw Nebri walking toward his 2 comrades.
"Ah, thank the stars."
Dezel ran back to them as Nebri dragged a large brown mattress behind him. Beatrix complained,
"Only one?"
"These are expensive in our land," Nebri said.
"So they do use currency. What do you use to trade?" Dezel asked. Nebri took something out of his pocket. Dezel could barely see it, as it was hidden by the crep's claws. Only when Nebri switched his hold to pinch it with the tips of his claws did Dezel see that it was a tiny copper coin with no markings, no bigger than Dezel's fingernail.
"Seems easy to lose,"
Kernich commented. Nebri laughed.
"Crepes never lose money. Too valuable."
"What about gold or silver?" Dezel asked. "How much are each worth?"
"Make a sword out of silver, then trade for a lot of money. But not gold, too heavy. It's late, my common tongue is bad. This mattress is for all of you."
It was much too small for 3 of them.
"I have spoken with my father," Nebri continued. "I helped him understand your situation. He will come by tomorrow before you fight. Now I must fetch you food." "What about a bath?" Kernich asked. "The river is that way,"
Nebri pointed.
"How far?"
Kernich asked.
"A 1,000 steps."
Kernich looked that way as if thinking about running.
"You're really going?"
Beatrix asked.
"It depends on how good we're eating. What's for supper?" "Fighters must be strong, all Crepes agree. You and the woman will be served meat, bread, and porridge. Dezel, you will only get bread and porridge."
He couldn't hold in his disappointment.
"Ugh,
He did manage to think of something for his comrades through his jealousy, though.
The meat has to be cooked for us. I know Krebs can eat it raw.
I know. You will enjoy it. I mean, you won't,
Nebris specified.
They will. Can't the boy get some meat?
Koenig asked.
I tried to convince them, but other Krebs got angry at me for suggesting it. The meat is only for humans who fight, wasted on those who don't. They said it, Dazzle. I am sorry for you.
He was tempted to volunteer to fight, but he would certainly lose the first match and embarrass his race. Maybe he could use his manipulation over the land. He took a moment to think, but that moment was all he had. Nebre was already leaving, and Koenig was running toward the river. Chapter 18. There wasn't any daylight left by the time they were done eating. Koenig and Beatrix used the mattress while Dazzle slept on his blanket. He didn't know what the Krebs had stuffed the mattress with, but it crunched loudly any time Koenig moved. The big man squirmed frequently, sighing as he seemed unable to get comfortable. Dazzle didn't want to make the two of them even more uncomfortable by staring, but he was curious to find out how close they chose to sleep beside each other. It was too dark to tell much, but there didn't appear to be any limbs resting across any bodies.
"This thing is too hard and lumpy,"
Koenig commented eventually.
"It's fine for me," Beatrix said. "Shall I put you to sleep?"
"No, I'll wake up with a sore neck if I don't settle right before passing out."
"So settle, then ask me to put you to sleep."
Dazzle asked, "Can you put me to sleep?" Beatrix got up slowly, as if she'd been relaxed before this. She leaned over Dazzle and put her hand on his forehead. A spell of drowsiness came over him, as soothing as a blanket of silk. He woke several times during the night, but he was able to fall back to sleep before any worries took over his mind and kept him up. Something kept pulling him toward the other plane, but his fatigue was too strong for it to have any power over him. They got to work in the morning, unsure when Koenig and Beatrix would have to fight. It wasn't long before a group of Krebs, possibly the same as before, came to watch. They were lively this time, pointing and laughing often. The source of their amusement appeared to be Koenig, as Dazzle instructed him and Beatrix while the three worked to build their temporary home.
"What are they saying?"
the warrior asked. Dazzle stopped so he could listen.
"From what I gather, they think it's funny how the best human swordsman doesn't know how to build." "Let them laugh, Koenig," Beatrix said. "They'll underestimate you."
"It doesn't matter if they underestimate me or overestimate me. They'll still lose."
"You fought one, Krep," Beatrix said. "Don't be overconfident. If one of them surprises you, they could send you out of here. Then even Psyche isn't going to convince them to let you come back."
"I was the best of anyone in the academy by my third year. I earned the Redfield champion title. I've only gotten better since then. I won't lose."
"But how accustomed are you to fighting opponents who are stronger than you?" Dazzle asked.
"Cleve Polgan was my instructor."
"He's much older than you," Beatrix pointed out.
"And yet he's somehow stronger. If you don't believe me, use Psyche to see if I'm telling the truth."
"But did you beat him?" she asked.
Koenig was silent for a moment.
"He's better than any of these craps. Relax, princess, I won't lose. You should worry instead about one of them resisting you."
Beatrix laughed. Dazzle wasn't sure he liked his comrades so arrogant, but apparently there was nothing he could do to change that. It took until the afternoon for Nebre to show up. By then the three of them had finished setting up the base of their structure. They'd made good progress on the walls as well, weaving many stripped saplings in and out across the thick poles. When the walls were done, the roof would come next, but that would have to be tomorrow. Hopefully it wouldn't rain. The clouds in the sky looked ominous.
"I'm here to take all of you to the arena," Nebre said. "We haven't eaten today,"
Koenig complained.
"No crepe came with food?" "No."
Nebre grumbled something in his native tongue as he looked around. He walked over to the group of crepes and said something as he gestured. They spoke back to him in aggressive tones, two of them spitting on the ground. Nebre stayed firm and spat right back. Soon the whole group was headed somewhere except for Nebre, who returned to Dazzle's group. It didn't matter how many distractions there were, Dezel couldn't forget that all of this effort and hardship would be for nothing if the Wind Knights never showed up to help them. It was hard enough to get these creps to give them food. He didn't see any way to make the creatures build a complicated and dangerous device using the Ackerel and Apple. Nebrit told them,
"Creps say only the smaller male knows how to build. Is this true?"
"What of it?"
Kernich challenged. Nebrit let out a sound of disappointment, something like, "Ma." He followed with,
"Creps need to respect you to let you stay and to feed you. Why don't all of you know how to build? You are powerful."
But Nebri put up his hand before anyone answered.
"I know not all humans build. I'm frustrated, not thinking. Many creps don't like you here, and they are changing the minds of others. I defend you as I can, but I don't have the time to take care of every need." "We have only one need,"
Kernich responded with anger.
"To eat!"
Beatrix put a hand on Kernich's arm.
"We understand, Nebri," she said. "We will prove ourselves when we fight soon. Are those creps bringing a meal back to us?"
"No, I couldn't convince them. Other creps were responsible at first, but they have chosen to ignore their responsibilities now. I sent the creps you saw here to find those other creps and make sure they are at the arena. You will fight one of them."
"Good,"
Kernich said with a smile.
"Wait."
His mouth went flat.
"So we're not eating before we fight?"
"No.
Follow me to the arena."
Dezel started collecting their bags. He didn't want Kernich to have to carry three like usual, for the warrior was already hungry and tired from working, so Dezel took two in his arms and one on his back.
"Give one to me,"
Kernich insisted.
"You're fighting and I'm not," Beatrix asked Nebri. "How far to the arena?"
"About 500 steps.
Dezel cursed inwardly. He couldn't make it that far without dragging the bags most of the way. Well, he wasn't fighting. Who cared if he lost respect with the creps?
"Are you sure, Dezel?"
Kernich asked as they started following Nebri.
"I am.
The bigger issue is that we can't have the creps laughing at you and Beatrix for not being able to build. Let me explain what we're going to have to do when we get back." Through grunts of effort, Dezel told them how they would finish, splitting saplings and weaving them through the small trunks to make walls. They would then have to build the roof with leaves. The broad, dry ones were better. They would have to find many of them and run a stick through them. They could then tie the sticks onto the frame they'd finished using vines, which they would also have to find. "We'll be lucky to finish before tomorrow night," Dezel said. Kernich took one hand off the two ackerel bags he carried and turned up his palm as if to feel for rain. He cursed. Dezel looked up and felt a drop hit his face.
"I should be able to get a rope for you,"
Nebri said.
"Thank you," Beatrix replied, "but it seems that we're going to need to sleep beneath a roof tonight."
"I would invite you to sleep beneath my roof, but I would lose the respect of my creps, and then I would lose my power in the tribe. My Seshar would leave to sleep under another crep's roof."
"Is there anything else that can be done?" Beatrix asked.
"We need a roof tonight."
Nebri seemed to be in thought as he put one hand against his chin. Dezel couldn't help but notice that they were large and strong hands, free to help carry one of the terribly heavy bags that was starting to make Dezel's arm burn.
"I cannot think of a solution," Nebri said. "I'm going to at least need some water before I fight,"
Kernich said.
"Your creps already won't be facing my best self." "I will bring you water after we arrive."
Nebri sounded irritated about this responsibility. In the silence that followed, Dezel could focus on nothing else but the heavy bags and his parched throat. He needed more of a distraction.
"When did you and your Sesha, I don't know the right word, marry?" he asked Nebri.
3 years ago. She's never happy when I must help humans."
"Why?"
"I have duties. Every crep does. We are paid for these duties. I worry about mine while I'm away."
"What do you do?"
"I don't know if there is a word in common tongue. I'm responsible for everything that happens at the library. I am responsible for all books and all creps who take a book."
"You manage the library," Dezel said.
"Manage is the word for that?"
"Yes."
"Then yes. I realize it might be easy work for humans, but Krebs have less respect for books. They are often damaged or missing. It is much work, but I trust the other Krebs who helps me when I must help you. Zok, an old friend.